Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Friday morning, coming up on 11:15. And, you know, it's a few days late, let's face it, but we're happy to bring you this week's book picks. We had to move things around. There were a lot of hearings, but always great to do the book picks, and better late than never. This morning, the folks from the Chatham Bookstore in Chatham, New York, join us to present a fine list of fine books for these fine last days of well, they're not the last days of winter. No, I'll just cross that off the. Were you
fine days?
just a theory. Were you last on at the end of the winter? Okay, you know it's going to be winter soon. We welcome Thomas Shulak and Joanne Trapanese to the roundtable. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Ray.
Nice to have you here. How
nice
was the drive up? Good.
It was raining.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Still raining out there?
It was.
A little bit.
I always say Studio A is like the world's most unfun casino. There's no windows. You right. don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, you have a great list of books, and let's get right to it.
Well, let me begin. Really, just kind of, I thought to start with a book that connects into actually the impeachment hearings in some, not direct way, but in some larger way. It's a book by Simon Sinek called The Infinite Game.
Hmm.
He's the author of Start With Why and Leaders Eat Last. Sinek's book is addressed primarily to business leaders, but also to politicians. And it challenges those leaders of all organizations.
To do what?
Well, he's basically challenging. He said there's too much finite thinking going on that's embodied in the economic thinking of Milton Friedman, a perspective that focuses on winning, metrics, bottom line, impersonal, and transactional relationships. He says that profits and growth are important, but they're not the heart of the matter or sustainable over time. Instead, he says, infinite thinking is bigger than ourselves or profits. It creates safe environments, inspires people, it fulfills people in organizations through advancing a cause, building trusting teams, studying worthy rivals, preparing for existential flexibility, and demonstrating the courage to lead.
Hmm.
The book challenges leaders to begin with purpose, then people, and finally profits. In infinite games, players come and go. Rules are changeable. There are no winners or losers. And Sinek affirms that the leaders who embrace an infinite mindset build stronger, more innovative, and inspiring organizations. So at a time in this country when we're experiencing what we are, we could sure use more leaders of the infinite game. So read this book, business leaders, politicians, and others who are interested, and be challenged and maybe transformed. This is a very timely book.
It'll be interesting to see how many Fortune 500 companies look beyond the bottom line. So we'll see how well that's received on Wall Street, right?
Yes, absolutely.
What else do you have for us?
We have Games of Deception by Andrew Marinus. And before we get into that, his father, David Marinus, will be coming to the Chatham Bookstore on December 3rd from 7 to 9 to talk about his book.
Wow.
So Games of Deception is the second nonfiction book for young readers by Andrew Marinus. The first was a New York Times bestseller, Strong Inside. And this one could easily be a companion volume to the Jesse Owens story and The Boys in the Boat because it's the same setting. It's the 1936 Olympics in Berlin.
Ah.
So Marinus talks about this was the first time that basketball was being played as an Olympic sport. He takes us back to 50 years earlier when James Naismith invented the game in nearby Springfield, Massachusetts. And coming to the 1936 Olympics, the Germans didn't know what basketball was really yet, so they planned to have the games outside, rain or shine. And of course, it was torrentially raining. One of the courts was 2 feet deep in mud.
Oh boy.
So imagine trying to dribble a basketball. The balls were very different then. They were not basketballs like today. They were smooth leather. So when the ball got wet, you couldn't hold on to it.
Right.
It was one of the weirdest basketball tournaments ever played. But the backdrop of the whole thing, the Games of Deception, is that Adolf Hitler was using these Olympics as propaganda to show that the Nazis under Hitler were kind, peace-loving people. And Marinus talks about firsthand accounts, like someone who stayed 3 days after the Games and saw all the Olympic banners come down and all the anti-Jewish banners go up all over Berlin.
Yeah.
And within 4 years, these peace-loving Nazis had really started World War II.
This is a young adult book?
It's
pretty heavy for a young adult book.
But he keeps it really interesting.
Now, this is Games of Deception by Andrew Marinus,
yes,
whose dad will be at the Chatham Bookstore on the 3rd of December.
Correct.
Just a question. I have not read either one. Does Junior write in the same style as dad?
No, it's very different,
yeah,
really. But they're both really well-researched.
Yeah.
And they're both good writers.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
Next is Infinite Hope by Ashley Bryan. Bryan is mostly known for illustrating children's books, and he has colorful, hopeful, joyful, lively illustrations. But in this book, he was asked to tell his life story as a World War II vet. So he was studying painting at Cooper Union, which was very prestigious for a black man in the 1940s, when he got his draft notice. And lucky for us and for the world, he brought his pencils and paints with him to World War II.
Ah.
So he was constantly writing letters home to his cousin Eva, and he was also sketching and painting what he saw. And some of that, of course, included the discrimination of a black serviceman in World War II. For instance, when they captured German POWs, the German prisoners of war were allowed to sit at the front of the bus, and the black Americans had to sit at the back of the bus. Or the black Americans were actually the first bodies carried off of the beaches in Normandy because they didn't want the white press sending home images of black servicemen heroically giving their lives for their country. And yet, throughout all of this, Bryan's words don't sound at all bitter. You can read his actual letters. This is basically the story of a gentle soul who used art to survive the horrors of both war and discrimination.
Mm.
We are here with Thomas Schulach and Joanne Trapanese of the Chatham Bookstore. Do you both share the duties of vetting these books? You get so many books all the time.
Yeah.
Along with other staff.
We have other staff. Our manager, Wendy Conway, my wife, Nicole Fernay, we co-own the bookstore.
Right.
Everyone gets involved in making the choices.
And when you come with this list, these are ones that have made the grade.
Yes, and we have lots of new books, and we spend a lot of time choosing which ones we bring.
It's a mania, isn't it? It really is.
Oh, it's a lot.
It's fun.
It's fun. It's a wonderful thing, but we make the choices, and we bring them here because we think they might be of interest to the people who are listening.
What else is on your list?
The Great Pretender.
Ah, the Platters.
Actually, that was Ain't Too Proud to Beg. I saw it the other night down at Broadway. Oh, my gosh, the Temptations.
Temptations, right.
Oh, my gosh, it was that great. But The Great Pretender by Susanna Kahalan, who's the author of The Brain on Fire. Mm. In 1973, a Stanford professor named David Rosenhan at Stanford convinced 8 healthy people to fake mental illness so that they could get committed to mental hospitals. They all, and while there, they were to observe the surroundings and how the treatment was and then report back to him. And as a result of that, Rosenhan published one of the most important books in the history of mental health in America in the Science magazine entitled On Being Sane in Insane Places, which is one of the significant factors that helped to fuel the deinstitutionalization of mental institutions in the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
The vision that JFK had was of community mental health centers, and many people said, well, we're going to build community mental health centers and all this network out there. We know it never happened. So what happened? It led to the criminalization of mental illness and the prisons being filled with the mentally ill today.
Mm-hmm.
But in this book, Callahan decides to find out more about this study by Rosenhan. And the deeper she goes into the study, the more she has questions about its validity. It's an amazing
really?
Story. amazing story. Anyone that wants to actually have a nonfiction mystery, get this book. If you care about mental health in America, get this book. If you care about scientific validity, get this book. The book reads like a mystery.
But are there answers at the end? That's the question.
There are some answers, and then there are some big questions about this study. But in the end, this study helped to transform mental illness in America, and I would say it brought about the diagnostic manuals that we have today, but it also brought about the criminalization of the mentally ill that now fill our prisons.
Okay.
Great book.
The Great Pretender by Susanna Callahan.
Right.
All right.
So the next three I've got are going to be quick picks.
Oh, yeah, we have 2 minutes, so they better be quick picks.
I'll make them really short.
Okay.
Three wonderful children's books. How to Read a Book by Kwame Alexander, An Exquisite Poetic Journey into the Adventure of Reading. Saturday by Oge Mora, a heartwarming story with lovely illustrations. And Sulwe by Academy Award-winning actress Lupita Nyong'o, a story about colorism. A stunningly gorgeous actress tells the story of a little black girl who feels ugly because she's black.
Hmm. The Kwame Alexander book, How to Read a Book. You need to be able to read in order to read the book. So explain to me what you're talking about here.
Well, you can have someone read it to you. They're children's books.
Right.
So presumably someone's reading the book with the child. He talks about opening up a book like you'd unpeel a clementine and letting the juices run down your hands.
I see. I like it. Yeah. I like it. Anything else on the list?
So real quickly, we have a local poet, and I thought with all this going on, a poem to end our time.
Oh, fantastic.
It's called Bell I Wake To by Patty Crane, who lives over in the Berkshires, one of the great, I would call, new poets of our area.
Mm.
And I'm going to just read one of her poems called Quill.
All right.
All these years on the sill besides two nests, a cairn of stones, the dying flies. The woman at her desk always picks me up, running her fingers along my hollow spine, sweeping me through air, eyes enclosed as if imagining flight. Even the slight wind of her breath is enough to stir me. So unearthly might I rise from the cracked green glass and fly back to my hawk.
Bell I Wake To. That's, I got to tell you something. You got a great voice, man.
He does, doesn't he?
Well, that was fun. Thank you for being here. Thomas Shulak and Joanne Trapanese of the Chatham Bookstore in Chatham, New York. To learn more, visit chathambooks.com. Remember, each week we put the book picks list right on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. And you are listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.